Hello, returning Happies and new listeners. This is Steve Bennett Martin.
And this is Stephen Martin Bennett.
And welcome to A Lifetime of Happiness, the podcast where we take you on our journey through some of the movies, shows, and other bits of pop culture that are helping to keep us happy, while hopefully bring a smile to your face along the way.
And today it's all about summer movies as we discuss Amazon Prime's Red, White, and Royal Blue, Bones and All, and as well as the movie Cobwebs.
Yes, and before we get into all of those movies that we watched together in all of one evening.
Yes.
What else has been making us happy?
For me, it was bumper cars, go-kart riding, and arcade games.
And funny thing, we did all three of those things at once. Well, we weren't playing arcade games while on the go-kart, but it was at the same location for our friend's party. We went to one of our local arcades and had a really good time.
And the bumper car spun around in circles.
Yes.
That was really, really cool.
Yeah, and I love how, you know, we chose the location because our friend has children who are tweens that are the age where arcades are the place you go on Friday nights. But it worked out just how much the adults, you know, that in our 30s and 40s were just having the time of our life playing the arcade games.
We're doing skee ball and that shooting the basketball game and then trying to knock down the clowns throwing baseballs. And, of course, the lesbian beat both of us.
Well, of course she did.
What about you, my darling? What's making you happy?
I would say for the first time in probably 6+ months, I took a mental health day off from work the other day, and it was very nice just taking a day off for no other reason than I was tired.
That is absolutely fantastic. I fully support mental health days, anything people need to do for their mental health, so bravo to you.
Yes, and something that also helped my mental health was we watched these three movies, and two of the three were awesome.
And we won't tell you ahead of time which one wasn't.
You'll have to figure out if we sandwiched it in the middle or led with it or ended with it.
Yep.
Let's start with Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Yes, it's based on the 2019 novel by Casey McQuiston. Red, White, and Royal Blue is Matthew Lopez's feature film directorial debut and is produced by Greg Berlanti, who does so many good things, Sarah Schechter, and was released on Amazon Prime on August 11th, 2023.
Yes, the film stars Taylor Zakar Perez as Alex, the first son, who falls in love with his rival Nicholas G as Prince Henry.
Yes, and what was your thought on the setup of this?
When I heard the setup, I was like, okay, Dennis recommended this in like our Gem and the Holograms episode or something as a book.
Because he had just read the book, yeah.
Over a year ago, probably. So I love the setup. It's very cliche. It's very, though, like cliche for a reason because people love those types of movies. I mean, we love watching a prince fall in love.
I mean, we've seen the Christmas Prince
and yeah, all those movies. So
I was like, and The Princess Bride, I was like, that's the movie I love. That's
I was gonna say, I mean, the straights love a royal romance and so do the queers, apparently, because this was a very fun setup.
And it worked really well. And can I also mention how much I love Uma Thurman as the female president with a Tennessee Williams drawl and like,
so this was a better world or a better universe.
Right. Ours. And I also love, like, so the first son is bisexual because we see him talking about a relationship he had with a scandalous reporter. Mm-hmm. But we also see all these women falling all over him. His parents don't know about the bisexuality. When he finally did have to come out, you're wondering, what's the president going to say? And all she said was, "We're going to need some pizza." And then they had this wonderful talk and it was lovely. And like, it's nice that the most powerful person in the world took it so well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you buy their romance? Because I mean,
100%.
Yes. Was it the chemistry as the actors?
It was the chemistry of the actors. It was also their shared understanding of the constraints they have had to live under, how they were born, where they were born, what their families did. And, you know, even if it had just been a buddy movie, it would have been you're an island in the storm type of thing that, like, you understand what I'm going through. But beyond that, it was also, I like you.
I know. And what would it mean to, like, the real world if we lived in a world where the first son and the prince fell in love?
We would probably need a world where we elected a president who was not in their 70s. And the closest we had to that was when Obama was there. But when Obama was in the office, the girls weren't old enough to be falling. Ooh, could you have imagined, though, if one of the Obama girls ended up marrying Harry, the one that can marry anybody he wants?
Oh, yeah.
That would have been amazing.
Yes. Now, with this and Heartstopper, which we covered last week, has one of the two male leads in this romance being bisexual. Do you feel that this is to increase bi visibility or to straighten up our gay movies?
So with Heartstopper, I think it was bi visibility because they weren't shying away from ace, trans, anything. I think that was, hey, we're saying that bi is legit as well. Like, I bought that. Mm. With this, I'm of two minds. Yeah. So it might be to straighten up a gay movie for mass market audiences. Mm-hmm. Or when I thought about it more, it does add some complexity to the plot because the prince would have been more hesitant and confused thinking that the first son was straight, seeing him kiss all those women and having seen nothing different. And, you know, the first son does come off a little because he's from Texas, so he's a little more rough and tumble. So maybe he is straight. So I can see how him being bi works with this story, but I'm also not giving them full credit that they weren't trying to straighten up the story a little bit.
Yeah, I would love it if we get to the point where in these types of movies, they're like, actor, what do you identify as? And if the actor's like, I'm gay, they're like, great, you're gay. And if the actor's like, I'm bisexual, they're like, great, you're bisexual.
So
especially like if it doesn't ultimately at the end of the day impact the plot.
Funny thing. So lots and lots of people watched this movie this weekend.
Yes.
Lots of straight girls were commenting on Twitter. That sex scene had to be imaginary. They can't do missionary. And so then you have all of these gays explaining to them how gay men can do missionary position, looking at each other. And all these women are like, wow, mind blown.
Oh, sweeties. Now, why do you think that we love movies like this that make, because obviously this movie made us happy. We enjoyed it. We recommend it. It's free and streaming if you have Amazon Prime. And if you don't have Amazon Prime, your mom or your cousin or your brother does.
And what are you doing with your life?
Yes. So check it out. It's well worth the admission. But why do we love these types of movies?
So it's escapism.
Yes.
It's the fantasy of it all. It's why on soap operas, most of the people come from money. Because they're able to go to these parties and wear these clothes and do these activities and fly these jets. There's glamour. And it's those things that 98% of America can't do. And we'd like to see people that we can root for doing those things. Because most of the people we see doing those things are awful and we hate them.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have people that we're like, oh, I like you. It's okay if you go to this party dressed like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed it and definitely check it out. Now let's move on to Bones and All, which is a 2022 romantic horror film directed by... That's what it's called.
I know. It's just romantic horror film.
Yeah. Directed by Luca Guadagnino, based on the 2015 novel by Camille De Angelis. The movie was not successful with a budget of $16 to $20 million and a box office of $14.5 million, which means it lost money, which like rarely many of these movies we cover lose money, even if they're not hits.
Yeah.
But the film was just recently released on Amazon Prime, so maybe it'll grow a new life and a cult following. Who knows? The film is a love story following two young cannibals on a journey of self-discovery across the United States.
So there was a band in the 80s called Fine Young Cannibals.
Yeah.
And so when you were reading that, I was like, two young cannibals. I was like, Fine Young Cannibals.
Well, you have the answer for a question I'll have for you later then. But so, how did this movie perform as a love story?
Okay. I want to get to that in a minute.
Sure.
$20 million budget. Where?
I don't know.
I don't see it because, okay.
Was it for Timothy Chalamet?
It must have been because do you know what the budget for Halloween 2018 was?
What?
$20 million.
Yeah, this doesn't look like they did the same budget. No.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, I thought this was an independent film. That's major studio money. Mm-hmm. They must. Okay. But as a love story, honestly, surprisingly well, as a love story, it was not the movie I thought I was going to be watching.
What did you think you were going to be watching?
From the trailer, a story of a girl who is afflicted with something that makes her a cannibal and discovering that and running from and hiding from these people that also have the thing. And those elements are in there.
But what is it about?
It's a cannibalistic love story. That's honestly what it is.
Yes. And now you laughed when I called it a romantic horror film. Would you consider this a horror film?
Technically, it has to be because of the subject material. Just like Silence of the Lambs, some people are like, that's not a horror film. I'm like, trust me, that's a horror film. This is a horror film. There's no way you can have a movie with the cannibalism that was involved and the different things and not call it some form of horror, because it's not because of the scares, because there weren't any. There had potential for scares. Two of those characters were terrifying, but they didn't go as far as they could with it. But maybe that's not the story they wanted to tell. I don't know. Do you think it was a horror film?
Again, like, because of the subject matter, but it's a horror film that, like, if we ever had brain surgery that made us feel like we wanted to have kids, I wouldn't feel an issue having an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old watch this because of cannibalism.
Right. If they changed it from cannibalism to, like,
if they changed it to vampirism, it would have been the next Twilight in terms of being able to be shiny, happy people.
Or I was going to say that it was only about people that they have a gluten allergy. Like, if you replaced the thing with a gluten allergy, it'd be the same story pretty much.
Yes. Well, did you buy the chemistry between Taylor Russell as Marin and Timothy Chalamet as Lee?
No, absolutely not. I thought it felt very flat and emotionless. The only part that I bought later on was when they were going to the university together.
Yeah.
And it was just cute and they were having this life. The people that had the most emotion in the movie were that first character that she ran into.
Sully.
Yep, Sully. The guy in the woods that was honestly scary.
Yes.
And my friend Burgess, who played the nurse, and Chloe Sevigny. Those scenes had the only emotion in the film. The rest felt so flat. And before you respond, I do want to say it was so cool. I'm watching this movie.
And then it's someone you know. I would be amazed too. It happened when we were watching, or when I was watching Manifest, the final season, and
yes,
I realized I knew someone from it. It's exciting when you see people you know.
And I had no idea that Burgess was in it, but I heard her voice and I was like,
Bird.
No. That's Bird. And you're like, okay, who's Bird? And I was like, my friend Burgess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, there, one thing that I loved about this film or the concept is that the idea that the people that we run into on a daily basis, that we kind of give us that creepy vibe or that ick factor, that, like, that magnetic pull that pushes us away from this individual, is kind of a sign that they're an eater, or like this world's version of a cannibal.
That's better than what I usually think of those people.
There we go. Yeah, no, I definitely think it's an interesting concept that, like, you're repelled against these people because there is something fundamentally different or wrong from them.
Yeah.
And how does the title work? I was getting really excited for how the movie might end when they explained that the concept of Bones and All in a cannibal love story is exactly what you would think of, which would be the bliss that you experience when you devour
everything
and you eat everything, bones and all.
And that means entrails, colon, sphincter.
Like bones?
Like, they say bones and all.
Yeah.
So you're talking.
So bones and all.
Like, yeah. You're talking about, I'm eating your rib cage, but don't forget, I just ate your colon.
Yeah. Now, I mean, once you get over the logistical difficulties of how one human could fit another human inside of their body,
yeah,
like in their stomach. What do you feel like that, how does this work for this movie and this plot?
So
as a title,
the title does add something to it. Like the whole question, if you were stranded somewhere and your friend died, would you eat them to survive? And most people would say yes, that they would eat the person to survive. They might not like it, but to survive. But eating the bones and all, that's not about survival. That's something else entirely. That's something darker. And I wish they had explored more of that instead of that being, well, we think that's what she did at the end of the movie. We think.
But we don't know.
We don't know. And so it kind of feels like a cheat.
Yeah, I hope she got to experience it, but it didn't look like she was very happy about it. I don't know.
Who knows?
So at the end of these three, can you tell which one of us made us the least happy?
Well, seeing as we haven't even gotten to the third one yet, I'm going to go ahead and tell you all, it was this one.
Yes, it was. So
it didn't make us happy.
Do I regret the hour and a half? I've done worse things or watched worse content, but
absolutely,
I wouldn't go out of the way to watch it if you're looking for horror or if you're looking for romance. If you're looking for a horror romance with cannibals, then go for it. But you also probably, if you were one of the $14 million worth of people that felt that way before, you probably already saw it. So let's move on to a new horror movie that everyone is talking about. Cobweb.
Cobweb is a 2023 American horror thriller film directed by Samuel Bodin in his directorial debut.
Bravo.
Based off the screenplay by Chris Thomas Devlin, the man behind the most recent Texas Chainsaw movie you either loved or hated.
I loved it.
I did too. And the film had a limited theatrical release on July 21st, 2023, before it was released on video on demand services everywhere, Friday, August 11th. Now, I want to comment on this for a moment because it's almost like the Hocus Pocus dilemma. Hocus Pocus is a beloved Halloween film that was released in the summer when it came out and it tanked. This movie being released on July 21st. In the midst of Barbenheimer.
Yes.
Could the studio have done better about releasing it some other time?
Possibly, but I think anything against Barbieheimer would have been hard. I also feel like it's not like this was too Halloween-y. It took place on
at Halloween. Yeah.
You know, and had a jack-o'-lantern near the climax and all of that. But I when this Halloween, when we're trying to rewatch the Halloween movies that make us scary and happy, I wouldn't call this a Halloween movie vibe, would you?
I don't know. It's definitely on my I will watch it again list.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, this is from, the film follows Woody Norman as Peter, a young boy with a mysterious knocking sound coming from his walls at night, who is being gaslit by his parents, Lizzie Kaplan as Carol, and Homelander, a.k.a. Anthony Starr, as Mark.
So when we were watching this, I said, you realize that Lizzie Kaplan is Janice Ian from Mean Girls.
I didn't realize it until, like, they were doing more of her when she was getting hysterical.
Yeah.
Her hysterical voice, I was like, it's Janice Ian getting mad at her.
But, like, in some of the beginning things, you're like, damn, Lizzie Kaplan has range.
It's like, damn, we're also all getting old. And with Homelander, it took me a moment to realize it was Homelander. But
because
I'm like,
dark hair.
But it's like, I know I don't like him. And that
exactly.
He clearly is evil. And then I'm like, oh, okay, it's Homelander.
That and makes sense. Yeah. That's what I said. I was like, I knew that I didn't like him as a person. And I had to look it up. And once I saw it was Homelander, I was like, yep, tracks.
Now, from the minds behind Barbarian, if, like us, you enjoyed The Barbarian, do you think you would enjoy this film?
100%. There's always room for some absurdity and horror if the acting performances can sell it. Like, what was Malignant? Malignant was another horror movie that swung for the fences, took big risks, and I think paid off. So, just like that, and in Barbarian, the acting performances here absolutely sell it, because not only is Lizzie Kaplan and Anthony Starr great as the parents, Woody Norman as the child does a great job.
Yeah, does a great job for a kid, or yeah, just in general. And because it is brand new and because everyone is talking, but we won't get into explicit spoilers.
Yeah.
But I would say of the two main concepts, one of them revolves around the ways that parents compare siblings. Were you able to relate to that at all?
Yeah, I was the golden child. I saw how my brother got punished for misbehaving, so I made sure to do the opposite. But then that also led to whenever my anxiety reared its ugly head, I had to be perfect in all the things I did. But that's a whole discussion for another podcast.
True. But yeah, I experienced it, and it wasn't even that like one of us was better than the other on everything, but my parents were constantly comparing each other. You know, if it was that I wasn't as good at art, it was that, well, your brother's better at art, why can't you be good at art? If it was that I wanted to play video, or like that I was better with school, they would guilt him about not being as good at school with me. But if mm-hmm. it was sports, they would be guilting me about not being as good as him. It was always a competition, but my parents were the coaches of that competition, and eventually my brother and I just didn't want to play.
Yeah, Barry was the sports, I was the student.
Yes. And the other theme that this shares with Barbarian and a lot of these movies that they're making, like, is the concept that sometimes people are just naturally born monsters. And in these cases, it's literally. Like, what do you think first of the making that figurative concept literal?
100%. I think some people are just born evil. I don't think when we're talking about this level that it's something you learn. Like, I always say racism is not taught. Born, it's learned. It is taught to you. You're taught to hate. With this type of thing, this is something you're born with. You have to be predisposed to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, I certainly agree. I know that, you know, you could say if someone was born as a sociopath,
right,
in this world, that, you know, even if they were in the middle of a jungle raised by wolves, that they would be just as sociopathic and murderous as right. if they were raised by two loving parents in a overprivileged white household
yes.
in Connecticut. Like, but do you think, though, if someone were to, in this case, in this universe of films, be born physically a monster, do you think that naturally means that innately they have that same monstrous tendency?
No. So I think if someone were born disfigured, I don't think they'd be inclined to evil, but you could go on that way on how you were treated. Like, is it the people under the stairs type of situation where the parents brought that out? Or is it, Or they were bullied and humiliated? Or is it someone that's just disfigured and they live a lonely, sheltered life? I mean, I think, but...
So do you think in this movie there's an alternate reality where Big Sis is just running around playing hopscotch with her hair in the backyard?
No, not this girl, no. I think in this one...
It's inside and out.
It's inside and out. She was born dark like that. And she could have had the best parents, but she's going to be headed down a path of darkness. I mean,
and she didn't get the best parents. No, spoiler alert.
On the other side of that, my favorite book, Good Omens.
Yeah.
So you have Damien, the Hellspawn, given to the best parents ever.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I don't want to end the world.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe even if you're predisposed for it, maybe you might not ever get there.
Yes. Well, we already said that you're going to watch it again. So I would say it's worth the $6 of on-demand rentals for a good night in. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's less than one movie ticket.
Yeah.
You watch it in the comfort of your home. Do it. It's a good time. And Lizzie Kaplan's performance alone sells the movie.
Yeah, it was very, very good. So yep. I definitely enjoyed it. Now, we are currently watching Witcher Season 3, so expect an update on that real soon. But in the meantime, let us know your thoughts on any of these movies or what else we should check out by emailing us at happylifepod@gmail.com.
Or you can get in touch with us on the socials, whether that is Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, at happylifepod.
And until next time, everybody,
stay happy.
Do 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 do. You're still here, which is great, because there's something we probably forgot to mention this episode.
That is correct. Each episode, as we're discussing movies, music, and games, there's a good chance we've used a small clip or two from the original source material.
Yes, and those clips are not ours. We do not own the rights to any of the music or clips. They were used to help solicit a discussion to appreciate the original source material.
And with that, if you are still listening, you likely really appreciate our material as well.
I mean, how could you not? And if you've enjoyed this episode, then you should also ask yourself, when's the last time I told a friend to check out A Lifetime of Happiness?
If your answer was not today, well, it should be.
Yes, so go tell your best squirrel friend about our podcast today, and don't forget to subscribe or follow us wherever you're listening to get new episodes each Wednesday.
Stay happy.